Okay, welcome everybody. This year, I think that probably I have a double or triple the amount of people listening to this year because many people that never made Pesach before, people were scheduled to go for Yontif to their in-laws or to hotels or their parents. And because of the current situation that we're in, people are staying home. So I'm going to try to go a little bit slower to make sure that everybody understands what they have to do to get ready for Pesach. I know that that's a lot of anxiety that people have to make sure that they do it the correct way. If you have any questions, and I'll emphasize this later on as well, you could always reach me by phone. I'm not leaving. I've asked everybody to mute themselves because if I open it up for questions, we'll have 50 questions at a time. It'll be too hard to focus. Here, so but after the shir, you can call me tonight until Arisha, please be muted. You can call me tonight until I don't know, at least midnight, or else you could call me anytime tomorrow or during the week, or you can send me an email. My cell phone number is 732-236-1382, but I'll give that again later as well. Okay. So Pesach is the Yontif where we have to know how to kasher our utensils and how to prepare the kitchen for Pesach. So I'll give you a crash course on kashering. There's a basic principle when you're dealing with kashering called kabolo kach poto. That means that the way it was absorbed, that's the way it goes out. And there's two primary ways to kasher. One is with fire, and one is with water. If it was absorbed with water, for example, if you use the pot to boil spaghetti, so now the pot is chametz thick, and you want to kasher the pot, you kasher with boiling water. But if you wanted to kasher a grill, or even a frying pan, which is used with a minimal oil, you would not be able to kasher with water. You'd have to kasher with intense heat. And I'll talk about in a few minutes how much heat is involved in kashering with fire. Okay, what materials are you able, and that's just an introductory comment about two different methods of kashering, but as we go through, you'll see how they apply to different specific situations. What materials can be kashered? So metal, stone, and wood, and natural rubber, everybody agrees, can be kashered. China, glass, Pyrex, Melmax, let's go back. China, glass, China, we don't kasher, period. Glass is shayla, but the minhag of the Ashkenazim is we do not kasher glass. So we don't kasher glass or china. The third category is things that are synthetic materials, like plastic, Teflon, Formica. So that is a dispute. There are some poskim that say, Rav Moshe Feinstein held that for Pesach, we don't kasher synthetic materials. However, many poskim hold that you could kasher synthetic materials. I always explain that almost every single kashrus agency kashers synthetic materials because if they wouldn't, they would have a hard time kashering factories. The OU, for example, does kasher synthetic materials, but Rav Moshe Feinstein held that you should not kasher synthetic materials. So some people are more stringent and they will not kasher anything synthetic, whereas others are lenient and they do kasher synthetic materials. I forgot to mention that enamel and porcelain, well, not enamel, but porcelain is the same as china. So china and glass and porcelain, we don't kasher. Metal, stone, wood, and natural rubber, we would kasher. Synthetic materials is a matter of dispute. We don't kasher areas that are very hard to clean. So a serrated knife, we would not kasher. Also a knife with a handle, if the knife is not very tight in the knife, should not be kashered because it's hard, you can't clean between the handle and the blade. And the prongs of a fork, you have to check carefully before you kasher them to make sure there's no food in the in between the prongs of the blade. A pot with a handle cannot be kashered unless you remove the handle, because there could be chametz between the handle and the pot. Whiskey cups, we do not kasher. That's the minhag. If you use it occasionally for whiskey, you could kasher, but otherwise you should not kasher whiskey cups. Okay, so now the method of kashering is as follows. The rule with kashering is that first of all, it has to be clean. And oftentimes, making sure it's clean is the hardest part of kashering. If there's nicks in a pot, you have to make sure there's no dirt lodged in the nicks. If there's rust, the rust must be removed. So there's many pots and pans where it doesn't even pay to attempt to kasher it because it's too hard to clean the pot in advance of the kashering. I'm going to share some of the things that I say every year. So if you heard it already and you're bored of hearing this, you can just turn it off for a few minutes. But I will share with you that when we kasher the stores in Highland Park to make them kosher, we kashered the bridge recently, or we kashered Dunkin' Donuts, we kashered about, 25, 30 years ago. The hardest part of kashering was not the physical kashering, it was preparing the store to be kashered. Dunkin' Donuts took us 24 hours just to get the store clean, to have it ready to be kashered. There we were kashering from non-kosher to kosher. But the kashering, you can't kasher something that's not spotlessly clean. If a pot has a handle, you would have to remove the handle in order to make sure that there's no chametz lodged between the handle and the pot. And then the handle would have to be kashered separately. Now, if you want to kasher a silverware, the way to kasher would be to kasher it in a pot of boiling water. Now, I do want to mention, if you don't have to kasher, you're better off not kashering, because kashering it's an effort to make sure that everything is spotlessly clean. Certainly, if you're going to make Pesach every year, it pays to invest in kosher silverware and kosher pots and kosher Kiddush cups. It's not, it's an expense, but it's a one-time expense. If you think that this is the only year you're making Pesach and you want a kasher, that's more understandable. In any event, how do you kasher silverware? So silverware, again, has to be spotlessly clean. If it's forks, make sure there's no dirt between the prongs. If it's a serrated knife, as I said before, we wouldn't kasher it because there can be chametz lodged in the serrated area. And between the blade and the a knife with a handle that's separate from the blade, it could only be kashered if it's a very tight fit between the handle and the knife. In order to kasher, you have to take a pot of water. It should be a pot that's kosher for Pesach. What do you do if you don't have a kosher for Pesach pot? So you have to kasher the pot to make it kosher for Pesach. The way you make a pot kosher for Pesach is you fill it with water and you bring it to boil. Now a pot, in addition to bringing it to boil, we want to make sure that the top surface of the pot is also kosher. So you would have to overflow the water over the top of the pot so that the rim of the pot also is covered with water. So the way you could do that is if you throw a rock into the pot, the pot is full, it will overflow the pot. The problem is that the rock will cool down the temperature of the water. So what you do instead is you have to use something hot to put into the pot. It could be a hot rock. You could put a rock on the stove and turn on the fire and let it heat up for about 10 minutes. And then very carefully, you take a prong and you pick up the rock and you dip it into the pot. And you'll just be careful, because as soon as you put it, if the pot is full, as soon as you put it in, the pot is going to spritz and overflow. Sometimes I used a metal pliers. I put that on the fire and then put that into the pot. But you have to overflow the top of the pot. The pot itself, before you kash it, I said before, it has to be clean on inside and outside. Before kashering, you always have to wait 24 hours. That's a rule always in kashering. 24 hours of downtime before kashering. Downtime means that it's 24 hours not being used for hot. It could be used for cold, but it should not be used for hot. We'll talk about kashering a sink in a minute. You have to have 24 hours downtime with a sink. That's often very difficult because you need to use the sink. You could use it for cold, but you can't use it for hot. So if we're still trying to figure out how to kasher the pot has to be not used for 24 hours. It has to be clean. If there's a handle, it has to be removed. Pots with lips are very, very hard to clean. If the top of the rim falls over and there's a lip on the pot, it's almost impossible to clean it because there's dirt that could be lodged inside the lip. There is a way to deal with that, and that's if you use the blowtorch, you could burn it out. But I don't recommend, if you're not experienced using a blowtorch, I don't recommend it. So if you want to kasher a pot, it should be a pot that doesn't have a rim, straight up. You wait 24 hours, you make sure it's clean, you boil water, you overflow the water, and now you have a kosher for Pesach pot. So then you take your kosher for Pesach pot, or if you're fortunate to have already a kosher for Pesach pot, that's what you're gonna use to kasher the silverware. So the way you kasher the silverware is first you bring the water, you fill the pot with water, and you bring it to a boil, and the because kashering has to be boiling in order to kasher for Pesach or to kasher anytime. You need this. I mean, the method to kasher for Pesach is similar to the method that you would kasher all year. If your silverware became treif, you'd use a milchiger spoon for fleishigs or something like that. It's more or less the same method. The water has to come to a boil, and then you put in one piece at a time. The reason why you should put in one piece at a time is because oftentimes, if you put in too many pieces, the water is going to stop boiling. And even when you put in one piece at a time, after a few pieces, it may stop boiling. We want the water to be boiling as the piece is falling into the pot. So you drop a piece into the water, you let it settle on the bottom, and you have to make sure that it's still boiling. And then you don't have to take the item out. You could leave it there. And then you keep on adding in more and more pieces until you have all the pieces that needed to be kashered. After everything is kashered, so then what we're supposed to do is you take the silverware out of the pot and you're supposed to run it under cold water, and then it's kosher for Pesach. Of course, if you didn't kasher your sink yet, you don't want to put your silverware in the non-kosher for Pesach sink. So you just have to figure out which the sequence of how you're going to operate when you're kashering. There's a benefit of kashering silverware for Pesach, and that is that normally you don't kasher from milchiks to fleishiks or fleishiks to milchiks. I've been asked this question in the 38 years that I'm in the rabbinate about 10,000 times. People want to know, could we kasher from milchiks to fleishiks? And I see some people on the screen are waving to me because they're the ones that asked the question. So you don't kasher from milchiks to fleishiks. The reason is, or fleishiks to milchiks. The reason is because it's hard to remember. You know, you decide you're going to kasher one day, and the next day you kasher the other way, and then you come home and you'll say to your spouse, hey, do you remember, what is it today? Is today the milchiks day or the fleishik day? It's so therefore Chazal said, it's too confusing. If it's milchiks, you leave it milchiks. If it's fleishiks, you leave it fleishiks. However, if something became treif, then you're allowed to kasher because that's not a usual event. Once you kasher something that's treif, you could use it for whatever you want. You could use it for milchiks or fleishiks. So when you're kashering from chametz, once you kasher it, if you have a set of silverware, once you kasher it, you could use it for, you could designate it for either for milchiks or fleishiks, whatever is better for you. So that's an advantage to kashering. you could change from milchix to fleishix or vice versa. After kashering, if you want to use that pot for Pesach, then you should re-kasher the pot. It's a chumrah, you don't have to do that. But what you do is you fill up the pot with water. You don't have to overflow the pot for this type of kashering, because it's really a kosher pot. You fill it up with water and you bring the water to a boil, and that'll re-kasher the pot. I did not mention that when you're kashering the silverware, or maybe I mentioned it, but I'll say it again, 24-hour downtime from the time that you're kashering the silverware. It shouldn't be used for anything hot for 24 hours. If the silverware was not clean and you had to wash it off, that doesn't detract from the 24 hours as long as you wash it off in cold water. But if you're using hot water to clean the silverware, then you have to wait 24 hours before you kosher. So that's basically the process. You take a kosher for Pesach pot, you wait 24 hours from the last time you used the item that you want to kosher. It could be silverware, it could be a Kiddush cup, and then you immerse the, you boil water, and you immerse it in the water. I didn't say how long. It should be in the water approximately 15 seconds. The water, make sure the water maintains the boil, and then you take everything out of the water and you put it under cold water. I cannot resist telling you one of my old famous favorite stories, and that is the first year that I came to the shul. I grew up in my father's shul. My father, Olav Shalom, was a rabbi, and he had a communal pot for kashering. The whole community of Forest Hills used to come and kasher in the communal pot. It was a catering kitchen in my father's shul in Israel Forest Hills. So they would boil up this big pot of water and people would come to kasher. So I came to the shul, so I knew that's what you're supposed to do as a rabbi. You're supposed to arrange for a communal pot. So where am I getting a communal pot? I spoke to Bumi Chop. He gave me this huge pot that we can use for kashering. And so whatever day it was that I chose to kasher, we were then in the gym. So we didn't even have a stove to use in the gym. So I didn't even remember who the rabbi was at the time, but the rabbi in Eitz Chaim was kind enough to allow us to use his stove. So I announced, you go to Eitz Chaim. So I brought the pot over about 2 hours before we were ready to kasher. I filled it up with water, and then I waited for it to boil. And I waited and I waited, and after 2 hours, the fire on the stove was not strong enough to boil that pot. So even after 2 hours, people started coming, and the water would not boil. I waited another half hour. It probably never would have boiled. So that was my first experience in kashering. It was a total catastrophe. But anyway, if you're kashering your house, you have to make sure the water is boiling, and then you could put in the items to kasher. Okay, now let's talk about, and I'm sorry you can't ask questions. I'm sure you have questions. Feel free to call me anytime you want. If you're trying to text me, I'm not getting a text feed because it would be too hard for me to figure out how to answer it. So I see somebody's raising their hand. The best thing is to call me afterwards, okay? Because we have 251 people online. If we open up the questions, I won't be able to give the rest of this year. I'm happy to answer all questions after this year. So let's talk about. Let's talk about how to prepare the kitchen surfaces for Pesach. So you have a table, and you have a high chair, and you have counters, and there's refrigerators and the freezers. How do you prepare those surfaces for Pesach? So the table, the minig is to we cover tables. Mishnah Berurah says you shouldn't kosher your table because since you eat on the table, there might be crumbs that get stuck in the crevices. So minig is to cover the table. Technically, you only need to cover the table one time, but I learned from my mother, Allah Hashem, that I should cover it three times. That's what she did, so that's what I do. I'm sure many of you do the same thing as well. I don't know if there's any halachic basis, just to be careful, because in case if the top tablecloth falls off, so you have the second tablecloth. So Pesach, the reason why we're so careful is because chametz is also b'mashu. Even a tiny drop of chametz is prohibited, whereas year-round, if a little crumb of something non-kosher will fall into the food, it will be bottle usually, but when it comes Pesach, even a mashu, even a little crumb, if it would fall into a pot, the food would become treif. So we're much more stringent when it comes to Pesach than we are year-round. So the table you cover, I usually tape down the bottom layers of the tablecloth so they shouldn't slide off, and then you put on the top layer. The counters, technically, you should be able to kasher counters. It's practically speaking, it's not a good idea. In order to kasher a counter, you would have to pour boiling water over every single spot on the counter. There would have to be a direct stream of water on each spot of the counter. To have enough water depending on the size of the counter, of course, but an average size counter, you might need two pots of boiling water I use to kasher my sink, I use two huge pots of boiling water. To do a counter that's a significant size, you'll have to use a whole bunch of pots of water. And where is the water gonna go? It's gonna go all over the floor. Now, if this was an industrial kitchen, so there's no problem. They have a drain in the middle of industrial kitchen because they wash everything down with hoses. They could do that. But in a home, you're not going to be able to. You have the water is going to destroy your kitchen, so it's not practical. Now, the question is, what about steamers? And this is also one of those questions that I get asked hundreds of times. Technically, Rav Moshe Feinstein says that you could use a steamer if the steam condensates on the surface, and then as the steam continues to flow out of the steamer, the steam boils the condensate, so that you have the condensate or you don't even have to use condensate. You could put water on the surface and then boil it with the steamer. The problem is that all the steamers that I tested do not get hot enough. I've been able to hold my hand a few inches away, and I don't burn myself. So a regular steamer that you buy for $50 or $75 does not get hot enough in order to boil the steam. Rabbi Drucker has a steamer that was given to him by a congregant of his in Detroit. It costs over $1,000. It's a industrial steamer that is able to boil the water. When we kasher plants, we use industrial steamers, and it's under pressure, and the water gets so, the steam is so hot that it'll boil water without any problem. But a regular steamer does not get hot enough. So people ask me, well, what about if I use an iron? Theoretically, an iron would work, but an iron also, the water is going to cool down the surface of the iron. If you use an iron, if you see that the water is bubbling, sizzling the whole time, that would be good. But again, in my experience, it does not stay hot enough when it's as you're moving it across the water to be effective. Rabbi Drucker has another way of kashering, and he has an inventor's mind. Rabbi Drucker has these metal cylinders, and he puts them on a like on a hanger, and he has a row of five or six cylinders on a hanger or on a metal pole, and he puts them on the fire, and they get very hot, and then he pours water on the counter, and he rolls the cylinder over the water, and the water sizzles, and that kashers. Now the thing is, even with his way, you can only roll it a little bit before it cools off. So what he does is he has a whole bunch of these cylinders. So he puts on the stove 10 of these gadgets, and then you use one, and then when it cools off, you take the other one, then use the next one. So if you want to ask Rabbi Drucker if you could borrow his cylinders, you could, or maybe if you want to make your own cylinders. But otherwise, the thing to do with a counter, which is much simpler than all these things, is to just cover the counter. If you're living in your house and you plan to be making Pesach every year, it's worthwhile to invest in buying counter covers. Whoever makes them comes and they cut them to size, and you just put the cover on and you're ready to go. If you don't have counter covers, you could use heavy duty plastic. Could be used. Theoretically you could use aluminum foil, but aluminum foil, you have to be careful that it doesn't tear. It's kind of hard to use aluminum foil on a counter, and it shouldn't tear over the course of Pesach. But the main point is that you have to, if you're not kashering it with boiling water, then you'd have to cover the surface for Pesach. A high chair, you don't have to kasher, but what you should do is you should cover the tray with paper, not regular paper, but the sticky paper. You could also cover it with silver foil, but I don't recommend using silver foil. I know if it was my grandchildren, they would have a field day with the silver foil and tear it to shreds. So much better to use contact paper, and you put it on the surface after Pesach. It leaves some sticky glue. You'll use a scrubber and you'll have to get it off. A refrigerator and freezer, you don't have to kosher it, because you don't typically put hot things in a freezer or refrigerator, but it should be covered nonetheless, because there's so many cracks and crevices usually in the on the shelves. So that's the minhag that we follow. We cover it. You could purchase liners. I know Glot 27 had them last week. I don't know if they still have them, but you could use a liner, or you could cover it again with silver foil, heavy duty silver foil. You want to cover all the surfaces in the refrigerator and the freezer where you're going to put down either food, or you have a vegetable drawer, or the shelves where you're going to put down pots and things of that sort. They should all be covered. It's a total good idea to poke holes in the silver foil if you can, because in order to allow, or if it's a rack, then the freezer, the racks usually, well, it depends on the freezer, but some freezers have solid trays. But if it's a rack with that's a mesh, then it's a good idea to poke holes here and there so that the cold air can circulate. What do you do with a sink? So if the sink is enamel, then you cannot kasher the sink. Then what you should do is you should cover the sink with silver foil and use a insert in the sink to wash your dish. You get one of these large plastic pans that you could put into the sink, and you wash your dishes in the insert. However, if it's a metal sink, so what you do is you could kasher it with boiling water. You have to make sure the sink is not used for 24 hours. A very good idea is to put a piece of tape on the hot water valve so that somebody does not accidentally forget to leave the hot water off. If your spouse will accidentally turn on the hot water, it's not such a good thing for Shalom Bayis, because it could lead to an explosion, especially if you're waiting to get your kitchen koshered. So best thing is put a piece of tape, or if one of your kids does it, I don't know what you'll do to them. So you cover tape it down. Don't just put a piece of soap foil on it. The kids will get around it, but you tape it down so it can't be turned on, the hot water. You could still use it for cold, but you don't want to use it for hot for 24 hours. Before you kosher the sink, it should be dry. And then you take a kosher for Pesach pot, you boil water, and you pour the water on the sink. Now, what makes it difficult to kosher, it's not impossible, but it's just more complex, is that if you pour water onto a surface, the water spreads out. That spreading out doesn't count for koshering. The koshering has to be direct, because you're koshering the same principle I told you about before, Kabbalah Kachboto. The same way it became non-kosher becomes kosher. So if you pour something into the sink, so it hits it directly. When it spreads out, it has a lesser degree of absorption than the area where it hits directly, because as it spreads out, it tends to cool. So when you kasher, you have to pour the water on each spot of the stream has to hit each spot of the sink. So you take a big pot of water, you just be careful that you don't burn yourself, or you could take a teapot. Sometimes it's easier, but it doesn't have as much water. And you slowly move back and forth along the sink in order to make sure that the stream of water covers each area of the sink. You should also pour water on the spout from which the water comes out of. Everything, of course, has to be clean before you're kashering it, before you're pouring water into the sink. You could kasher the drain spout also if it's not difficult to clean. You wash it off and then you pour the boiling water on the drain spout as well. It's a good idea to unscrew the filter from the faucet and make sure that it's clean before you do the kashering for Pesach. You do not have to pour hot water on the handles. You just have to pour hot water on the spout and the surface itself. It's hard to pour hot water along the sides of the sink. What I do is I try to pour it along towards the top of the side, and then let the water cascade down, and that in that manner you could kasher the sink. Okay, what about a dishwasher? I know everybody wants to kasher a dishwasher. There are if you look in the OU directory, I think they recommend not kashering dishwashers, and I hope everybody has an OU directory. I ordered about 300 this year. I didn't know that we were going to have to close the doors to the shul. If you don't have a directory, I have about 200 directories. What I'm going to do is I'll put them out on my porch, unless it's really raining heavily. But I'll put them on my porch, and you could come and take one. And the OU directory says kashering dishwasher is complicated. It should be only done in consultation with halachic authority. So the reason why kashering a dishwasher is complicated is for two reasons. The one reason is because when you kasher, the kashering temperature has to exceed the temperature at which it was used. Unless you're using boiling water, then the boiling is the maximum. But otherwise, it has to, the kashering temperature has to exceed the temperature at which it was used. It's a dishwasher. It has how are you going to get it hotter than the highest setting on the dishwasher? So one way to do it would be to boil water and pour boiling water into the dishwasher, and that will raise the general temperature of the water coming into the dishwasher. Jay Shulman told me that that's not a good idea. He did it once. Based on my recommendation years ago, and he said it ruined all the settings in the dishwasher because there was more water in there than there was supposed to be, and the computer chip got all messed up, and he had to reset it. He had to call the factory and find out how to do it. So that's not such a good idea. The other way to do it is to raise the temperature of the hot water heater that you have typically in your basement. I just spoke to Jay Shulman today again, and he said if you raise the hot water heater for too long, so what's going to happen is there's going to be too much pressure in the heater, and the escape valve is going to pop, and the water will get all over the floor. So we don't really want that to happen. But he said he thinks if you turn it on and let it heat up for about 30 minutes, turn it on to the highest setting, let it heat up for about 30 minutes, and then after 30 minutes, you kasher your dishwasher. And the truth is, you only have to have the water that hot for the initial, there's more than one cycle in the dishwasher. So it's primarily the first cycle that has to be hot. So you run it, let's say, 10 minutes after the 30 minutes, you run the dishwasher for about 10 minutes, and then you could go downstairs and turn the heat the setting of the boiler to a lower temperature, but that's the first thing that you have to take care of when you're kashering the dishwasher. The second thing is that The way dishwasher works is it has a U-shaped pipe that comes out of the bottom of the dishwasher. And the dishwasher, the way it operates is it fills up with water, and then the arm that spins around has little holes in it, and it sucks up the water on one side and it sprays it out the other side. Now the water, as it fills up, it starts filling up in the drain pipe. The reason why it doesn't go down the drain pipe is because the drain pipe is a U-shape, so it's able to fill up. First it fills up in the bottom of the drain pipe, and then it rises into the level of the dishwasher. I don't understand the physics exactly, but it comes up from the drain pipe. Now, the drain pipe typically is not clean. I spoke to Steve Josefowitz about it, and he said that whenever he's opened up a drain pipe of a dishwasher, there's always stuff in it. There could be Cheerios or other things that are in the drain pipe. And that presents a problem, because you're filling up the drain pipe with water, and there may be stuff in there that's chametz stick. So if you're very handy and you know how to take out the drain pipe, then you could do that, and then make sure it's clean. You wash it out and make sure it's clean. But most of us probably could not do that without breaking the whole dishwasher. So, or at least maybe I should only speak for myself. So what you do is, so the suggestion that I have is that you could pour there's a heavy-duty cleaner for dishwashers. It's called CLR. It's the same, it's the word clear without the vowels. CLR. You could get it in Home Depot. I don't know if Home Depot is still open, but if it is, you could get it. Maybe you could buy it online. CLR. And the instructions are to use, I believe, 4 ounces, or I think that's what Jay Shulman told me today. But you look at the instructions. Whatever the instructions say, you pour that in. Oh, there's a picture that somebody has. You pour it into the dishwasher, and before you start running it, pour it into the drain. And what hopefully that will do is, if there is anything in the drain, in all likelihood, whatever's there is no longer edible, because it's gone through multiple cycles with the detergent. But this is an extra added protection. So you pour that in before you start running the dishwasher. The dishwasher, before you kosher it, has to be not used for 24 hours. It has to be clean. Most dishwashers, unless you have a very old model, but a regular dishwasher is generally clean anyway, because as you're washing the dishes, it cleans itself out. The one place where a dishwasher is often not clean is on the bottom of the door. If you open the door, you can put your hand along the surface underneath the door. That often is greasy because the water doesn't come onto that surface. So you should wash that off so that it should be clean. Now, what about the racks in the dishwasher? So the racks are, I never saw a dishwasher with plain metal racks. Maybe there is such a thing, but the dishwashers that I'm familiar with, the racks are all covered. They're metal covered with some type of coating, plastic or some synthetic material that covers the racks. So according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, you would not be able to kosher those racks in the dishwasher. According to other poskim that are lenient with koshering synthetics, you could leave the racks in the dishwasher and you could kosher them at the same time. If you are following the more stringent opinion and you don't want to kosher the racks, the only thing you could do is you could buy a new set of racks, but the racks are very, very expensive. They might be just as expensive as the whole dishwasher. It costs usually $200. I don't know why they're so expensive, but they are, unless maybe somebody knows a cheap way to buy racks. But you'd have to replace the racks. And if you don't kosher plastic, you'd have to replace the racks. But if you kosher plastic, then you leave the racks in place, and then and that'll kosher the same time the dishwasher is koshered. The racks will be koshered as well. Okay, now let's talk about the stove and the oven. What do you do about the stove and the oven? So the stove top is like this. It, first of all, if it's a flat stove top, which has a glass stove top, those are problematic. You can't really kosher them. The reason is because the only part that becomes hot on a flat top is a limited area. There's like a, I mean, you could draw a circle there, but you don't know where it is. I mean, you could figure it out with your, by putting your hand there and seeing where it's hot. But the heat does not transfer from that circle. It doesn't transfer to the rest of the area between the different burners. So, and when you put a pot on the stovetop, you're not careful, or you have no reason during the year to leave it only exactly on top of the burner. Some of the pots may be even bigger than the burner. And if there's any chametz that, if the pot overflows and there's chametz, let's say you have a soup with the barley, so the soup would be chametz thick, and then it could, if it overflows on the stove, so then the wherever it overflows will become chametz thick. So you have to heat up the entire glass surface. The only way to do that is to put a blech on top of the glass surface, and that will spread out the heat. But not only will it spread out the heat, but it'll also crack the glass. I know because somebody in the shul tried it, and their glass top stove cracked in half. The manufacturers, if you read the instructions, the manufacturers say do not cover with a sheet of metal, do not cover it with silver foil, because it's not intended to operate that way. It's too much heat, and the glass cannot sustain it. So if it's a flat top, the only thing that you could do is you could buy a disc. They induction ovens, you know, you don't, there's no fire, and you have to put in the induction oven, you put a metal disc on top of the, on the stove top. It's an induction stovetop, and then you put the pot on that metal disc. I believe the metal discs are copper, if I remember correctly. You could buy them online. It's a induction oven disc. That's what they're called, I believe. And they're not that expensive. Maybe for $15, you could get a disc. You could buy four discs, and that'll cover four burners on the stove. And then what you would do is you clean off the stove as best as you can, make sure it's clean, and you turn on the fires or the burners and let it heat up as much as it can. But then after that, when you want to cook on Pesach, you'll put those induction discs on top of the flat top, and then you cook on the on those discs. If you're in the market to buy a new stove, don't buy a stove with a flat top. It's not a good idea if you want to use it for Pesach. But if you have one already, that's the best you could do, is you would use those induction discs. If you have a electric stove top where the coils are raised, and you put the pot on those coils, and those are not under a glass surface, they're coils, so it only sits on the coils. Those are the easiest stoves to kosher. All you have to do is you turn it on for about 5 minutes until it gets red hot, and then it self-kosher. You don't even have to clean it beforehand, because if there's anything there that's not clean, it'll get burned away. So that's what you do with the burners. If you have the old-fashioned stoves with gas burners, and there's on top of the burners are the racks where you put down the pots. So they do not, you don't have to kosher anything. You don't have to kosher the caps, and you don't have to kosher the surface of the stove. You only have to kosher the area where the pots will sit. That has to be kosher. There's two ways to kosher it. One way would be to turn on the fire and put a piece of silver foil over the fire so that the heat spreads out. Many of the grates do not conduct heat that well, so even if the fire is coming out in the middle of the grate, it won't conduct to the side of the grate. So then you would have to put a piece of silver foil over the grate in order to spread the heat. You just have to, before you kosher it, you have to make sure it's totally clean. You may have to use EasyOff to get it clean, but then you turn on the fire for about 15 minutes, and that will kosher. Just be careful, if you turn on all the burners, for 15 minutes. It may be too much heat. So I would do one or two at a time. There's an easier way to kasher the grates, and that is when you kasher the oven, you can kasher the grates at the same time. So let's talk about how you kasher the oven, and then I'll tell you again about the grates. The oven, in order to be kashered, has to be clean. And by the way, the grates, when you kasher them, should not be used for 24 hours. The oven, also when you kasher it, should not be used for 24 hours. If you have a self-cleaning cycle, then you don't have to clean the oven. Then it's easier to take care of it. And actually, self-cleaning you could even do without waiting 24 hours, because whatever's there gets burned out. You turn on the self-cleaning cycle, and that basically, an average self-cleaning cycle is about 3 hours. That will kasher the self-cleaning oven. I know from experience that self-cleaning the oven is not healthy for the oven. The self-cleaning cycle after a while doesn't work so well. It lasts for an hour and then it shuts off and you have to turn it on again. So if you're not able to use, or you don't want to use the self-cleaning cycle, then you could kasher the oven and by turning it on to broil, which is the highest setting, which is usually about 550 degrees. If you turn on to 550 degrees, then you let it stay on for a little bit over an hour, and that will kasher the oven. The advantage of self-cleaning is you don't have to clean it beforehand. If you're doing it with a setting of 550 degrees, then you have to clean the oven carefully beforehand. Clean means that there shouldn't be anything that you could feel on the surface. If you can't feel it, it's not a problem. If it's, in other words, it's just a discoloration, that's not a problem. But if there's something that you could feel, you have to clean it off. You have to use Easy Off to get off whatever is on the oven. If you clean it with Easy Off and it doesn't come off, so then spritz it a second time. If it doesn't come off the second time, you could assume that the Easy Off made it totally inedible. And you don't have to worry about it. If what's on the oven is totally black and it's not greasy at all, so then that's charred material, so that also does not have to be removed. So again, if you're using self-cleaning, you don't have to clean it at all. If you're using a non-self-cleaning cycle, then you have to make sure the oven is clean. You could leave the oven racks inside at the same time. Again, you have to make sure the oven racks are clean. If you decide to self-clean, you could leave the oven racks in as well. You won't have to clean them. I just let you know that the manufacturers usually say that leaving the racks inside for self-cleaning cycle will lead to discoloration of the rack. So that's your choice whether you want to do that. If you wanted to, you could kasher the oven with the self-cleaning cycle and then take out the racks when you're doing that, and then you can put the racks in later and kasher them separately on 550. When you're kashering at the oven, you could put the grates inside the oven at the same time. And you don't need the self-cleaning cycle for the grates. You could put them in on 550 for an hour's time, and that will kasher the grates. I know that some grates have these little rubber pieces that are on the bottom of the prongs of the grate, so that it doesn't scratch the stovetop. I imagine they're going to melt off in the oven if you put on 550. I used to have those little pieces on my grates; they fell off on their own, so I don't have to worry about it anymore. But if you're concerned about the grates, the other option is to either, like I said before, you could turn on the gas for 15 minutes, or what many people do is they have another set of grates that are kosher for Pesach, and that's that makes it much easier. When you kasher the oven, this method of kashering by turning the oven on to 550 will not help for a broiling pan. Broiling pan, since the food sits there directly, you have to kasher it in a self-cleaning cycle. It won't get kashered in a regular cycle, 550. Let's say your oven doesn't go up to 550. Let's say it only goes up to 450 or 500. If it goes up to 500, so you can kasher it by leaving it on for an hour and a half, If it goes up to 450, I think 2.5 hours would be sufficient to kosher the oven. On the stovetop, we'll go back to the stovetop again for 1 minute. The knobs on the stovetop, you don't have to kosher them either. You don't have to put them in boiling water. They should be clean. That's all, to make sure that they're not dirty from anything that has to do with chametz. The minog of many people is after you kosher a stovetop, so there's the area between the grates. People will put silver foil in that area. It's really a precaution. It's just to make sure that if accidentally you put down a spoon on the stovetop, it won't become non-kosher for Pesach. Maybe there's a concern of splattering also. It might splatter from one pot to the next. I think it's very far-fetched. But if you put down silver foil, so then the silver foil is kosher. You don't have to worry about splattering. In general, you should never put if you have a stovetop that's milchiks and fleishiks, you should never put anything down on the stovetop itself, because then that area is, in other words, the area between the grates is going to be treif. If you have two stoves, and one stove is milchiks and one stove is fleishiks, so then that area for year round is not a problem. For Pesach, you're not going to kosher. You don't want to pour boiling water on the stovetop. It's not necessary. You wash it, and it's best to put a piece of silver foil there. You should be careful. Do not put the silver foil too close to the burners, because what it could happen is the carbon dioxide could be captured inside the silver foil, and that could cause an explosion. So you want to stay away from the actual area where the burner is, but that's how you would kosher the stovetop. Okay, so that's basically it. The stovetop, we talked about the main thing to kosher is the grate. You could either put a piece of foil over it, or if it's electric, turn on for 5 minutes. If it's not foil, you put 15 minutes with the gas on, or you could put it in the oven and it'll get koshered in the oven. You don't have to, inside the stove, there's always stuff that falls into the openings. So you clean it out as best as you can. You don't have to spend 5 hours with a vacuum cleaner trying to get everything out. And when it comes to chametz, we say that you have to clean ad makom she'odo magas, as far as it's possible to clean. So an area, say, under the refrigerator, it's not hard to move the refrigerator out, so you should really move the refrigerator and clean under the refrigerator. But the inside of the stove, you're not required to unscrew it in order to take the top off. If you want to, you could. Maybe a good idea anyway, but again, you have to know how to do those things without destroying the stove. Okay, microwave. What do you do to kosher a microwave? So a microwave could be koshered. You should not use it for 24 hours. Most microwaves are plastic inside. They're not straight metal. So it again revolves around the same issue that I talked about before, whether you could kosher plastic. If you could kosher plastic, then you could kosher the microwave. If you don't kosher plastic, you should not kosher the microwave. If you're koshering the microwave, you cannot kosher the glass plate the pots sit on in the microwave. Because it's we don't kosher, as I said before, we don't kosher glass for Pesach. That's the minhag of the Ashkenazim. But when you could kosher the rest of the surface, if there's vents, it's a good idea to just wash around that area. Maybe use a toothpick to make sure there's nothing inside the vents. And then what you do is, again, you have to wait 24 hours. The glass plate you should replace with a kosher for new glass plate. They're not that expensive. And then what you do is you put a bowl or a cup of water on the surface of the microwave, and you let it steam at a high temperature for about 15-20 minutes until the whole oven fills up with steam, and that will kosher the microwaves. You'll say, why is it enough to kosher with steam? Why don't you have to pour boiling water all over it, which is not practical? The reason is because it became non-kosher with steam. The microwave gets very, very hot. The moisture, even if you put a potato in the microwave, it steams, or a piece of matzo will steam, because the microwave heats up whatever moisture is in the object, and therefore it creates a lot of steam. So this, what you're kashering from is the steam. So you can kasher, you put a bowl in there, and that the steam will kasher the microwave surface. When you're finished, you have to still kasher the spot where the bowl was sitting. So in order to do that, you have to move take the bowl off of where it's sitting and move it to another spot, fill it up with water again, and again, let it run for 15, 20 minutes. I would caution you not to move the bowl when it's very hot, because the water will be supercharged hot. And I was told that if you move something that's supercharged, it could sometimes explode and it could lead to serious burning. So you should wait till the water cools and then move the bowl to another area and repeat the process. If the microwave has an enamel surface, then you would not be able to kasher it. But assuming that it has a plastic surface, if you do kasher plastic, then it would be okay. I'll emphasize again, before you kasher the microwave, that has to be 24 hours of downtime. Okay, I think that more or less, oh, here's the big question. That if you could talk to me, so many of you would say, what about a warming drawer? Could we kasher our warming drawer? Unfortunately, you can't kasher a warming drawer. The reason is because it doesn't get hot enough. There's a minimum temperature for kashering. The warming drawer, an average warming drawer gets up to a maximum of 240 degrees. It's hot enough to absorb a material and make it non-kosher, but it's not hot enough for kasher. You can't kasher 240 degrees. Theoretically, you could kasher a warming drawer by putting sternos in the warming drawer. The sternos are those things when you go to a wedding underneath the chafing dishes, to keep the food warm. They put those little cups with a wick, with a candle, and if you put in 5 or 6 sternos into a warming drawer, it would probably raise the temperature significantly. But I don't know. I mean, I spoke to people who are professional kashers. They said it probably will destroy the internal mechanisms and the wiring and stuff, because it's not intended to be used at that temperature. So I don't recommend it. And then somebody said, well, why can't we line it with silver foil? And we'll double line it to make sure that it doesn't tear. So the problem with silver foil is you can line the sides and you can line the bottom, but how are you going to get silver foil to adhere to the top of the warmer? So I don't have a practical way to kasher the microwave of a warming drawer for Pesach. Then everybody's going to typically ask, what about urns? I already got 6 people today sent me emails, can we kasher our urns? The problem with urns is, first of all, if you have one of those pump urns, then you won't be able to kasher them, because the pump urns, you'd have to kasher the lid together with the rest of the urn. The lid cannot go in water. You can't even be tovel the urns, the lid in water. It'll ruin the computer chip. I know, because I was once tovel a urn cover in water, and it didn't work anymore. When I brought it back to the store, I said, it's broken. They said, no, you broke it, because you probably immersed it in water. They knew it was a store in Borough Park. So that's true. You can't immerse an urn if it's a pump urn. The old-fashioned urns don't have any computer chips. It's just you pull the lever and the water comes out. But if it has a pump, oh, it has a computer chip, and then you can't. There's no way to kasher. You'd have to put it into a pot of boiling water. It would completely destroy it. If it's an old-fashioned urn type, so then theoretically you could kasher the urn, but it's a little bit of a difficult process, because you'd have to fill the urn with water and overflow the urn with a hot rock. The problem is even that's not going to be sufficient, because the issue with the urn is not the inside of it. Typically, the inside of the urn is just exposed to water. The problem with the urn is that it's sitting on the counter, splattering from your chalent pot or some other things, and it's very hard to guarantee that it never came in contact with anything chametzdik during the course of the year. I know my urn, even though we keep it off to the side on the counter, every now and then we have to wash it because there's stains on the urn. So it's, you know, our kitchens are not hospital settings, and they're not so sterile. So it's you'd have to, if you get splattered on the outside, you'd have to kosher the outside. So you'd have to take the whole urn and put it inside a pot of boiling water, and then that'll kill the motor. So it's just not it's not practical to kosher the urn. The best thing is to purchase a new urn for Pesach. If you purchase a urn that has a pump, so then the question is, how are you going to be tovel it? You have to be tovel it before you use it. You have to immerse it in a mikvah. Either some urns come with a hechsher. They say that it was made, it doesn't need toveling. The way they affect that is whoever is giving the hechsher, or the company, they're giving a hechsher for a company. It's a Jewish company and they make it in China. I don't know if they're doing it anymore, but most of these urns are made in China, and they would purchase from the manufacturer the materials that the urn is being made with, and they would and the workers would be hired by the manufacturer. Rabbi Belsky, Zichron Levracha, was not keen on these kind of hashkachas on urns, but you know, there are Rabbanim, most of them, their names are they're respectable Rabbanim. So if you want to rely on the hechsher, there is a basis to do so. Although I would say Rabbi Belsky was not comfortable with it. Because he thought it was just, you know, tell them that you're buying the materials is just sort of like a harama trick. The other way to deal with it is to, if you sell a small portion of, if there's a non-Jewish partnership, you don't have to be tovel the vessel. So you could sell even, say, 10% of the urn, you could sell to a non-Jew. If you have a non-Jewish housekeeper, you tell them that for ritual reasons, you would like to sell them 10% of your urn, and the acquisition has to be done in two ways. There's two ways to make acquisition in Jewish, there's a few ways, but when you're selling to a non-Jew, you tell the person first pick it up, you hand it them, pick it up 12 inches. That's one thing that's called Kinyan Hagbah. And the other thing is you ask them to pay you a dollar for the 10%, and in order that they shouldn't feel that you're taking advantage, you could give them a dollar and say, here, this is your dollar, and now you could use this dollar. I'd like you to purchase the 10% of the urn, and then you ask them, would it be okay if I use your portion of the urn? I assume they'll say okay, and then you could use the urn without koshering it. Okay, the last thing that has to do with koshering is tablecloths. And tablecloths could be washed. You could wash the tablecloth in a washing machine. You should wash it at a hot setting, and then you could use it for Pesach. If it's a plastic tablecloth, there's no way to wash it, so you should get a new plastic tablecloth for Yontif. But if it's a fabric tablecloth, then it could be washed and you could use it for Pesach. Okay, I see it's already an hour and 10 minutes, and I could tell from the amount of people that are participating that it's going down and down because it's been a long shiur. So what I'm somewhat reluctantly going to do is I'm going to schedule, I have what to say about products. I'll schedule that for later in the week. I'll send out an email. Maybe Tuesday or Wednesday, I'll do another session. I need probably about 45 minutes to talk about Pesach products in terms of what's new, and also some information that's important to know about the Pesach products and what things don't need extra for Pesach. So I'm sorry that usually I combine everything together. I think I went a little slower tonight because there are people online that never kashered before. I will just conclude. I always like to conclude with some type of thought, and I would say that perhaps the reason why Pesach is all the laws of kashering revolve around Pesach, and that we don't have to kasher for other Yom Tovim. Perhaps that is because Pesach represents the time of a new beginning. It's when the Jews went from Avdus Secheres, from slavery to freedom. That's when the Jewish people started as a new entity. Perhaps that's the reason why on Pesach we destroy the chametz, because chametz represents the fermentation, the things that have gone awry. It's the Yetzer Hara. Chazal referred to it as chametz, and so we want to destroy, eradicate the Yetzer Hara as best as possible. So we want our pots to be pure, and therefore we purify the pots on Pesach. But we should remember, as we purify the pots, we also want our souls to be pure as well. And especially in this year, which is different, when we say Manishtana, it's going to have another meaning this year, because it's going to be a different Yontif than normally. I know many people are not going to have all their children for Yontif. My children, grandchildren are not going to come this Pesach, because it's just not a good idea to have grandchildren with grandparents who are much more at risk for the coronavirus. So it's going to be a Manishtana Pesach. But even so, in particular, because we're living at difficult times, we want the Pesach to be perfect. And we should think about that when we search for the chametz in our house, we should also, and purge it, we should also be looking at the chametz in our own souls and make sure that we're as pure as possible. Okay, I wish everybody a good evening. And if I don't talk to you before Pesach, Chag Kosher V'Sameach, please feel free to call me anytime you want, day and night. I'll be happy to answer those questions that I know that many of you had and I wasn't able to get to tonight. Okay, that concludes our session. Now I just have to figure out how to turn off this thing. I'll have to call my daughter probably. Exit.
Thank you, Rebbe.
Here we go. End meeting for all. Okay, that's
there
it.
There you go. That's it. Much.
You see, I figured it out on my own. That means I'm a computer whiz. Yeah, now you can.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Now you can put that in your resume.
You're welcome. Okay, I'll put on my resume.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good night, everybody. Okay, my pleasure.
Thank
nice
you.
To see. Now I'm seeing everybody. Wow, so nice to see everyone.
Thank
I haven't seen
you
for a while.
Thank you very much, Rabbi.
Okay, my pleasure.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thank you.
My friends, it's so nice to see my friends. Okay, have a wonderful Pesach.
Good night, Rabbi.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
Okay, we say good night. I mean, I could stay online for an hour and say good night, but it's such a pleasure. Okay, so you call me with all your questions. Have a good night. Bye bye.
Okay, good night.
Oh, I did the wrong thing now.
I get out. How do I leave?
End meeting. I'm so sorry.